Seth, the NFL, are they contributing to the wussification of America by banning the Oklahoma drill and the bull in the ring drill at training camp?
I saw this yesterday, and it's news that they're banning the Oklahoma drill. Did you see anybody say that? Like, was there any NFL team in the last two decades that's run a bull in the ring drill? Maybe in the last four decades. I can't ever remember. So for those of you that don't know, bull in the ring is this psychotic drill that you do when you're 12 years old, and it's terrifying the entire time. I think most youth football leagues have banned it for a while now. Maybe some still do it. Text in 713-572-4610. Tell me if your youth football league or your high school still does bull in the ring. But you line the whole team up in a circle. Then you send like a kid, let's say poor little Billy Jernigan, who weighs 103 pounds. You put him out in the middle with a football in his hands.
Yeah.
Then you say, all right, Billy, head on a swivel. And Billy starts swiveling around, you know, like spinning around, looking for where the threat is. And then the coach calls out the number of a player. And then that number, let's say it's number 57, the psychotic linebacker that's been held back two grades. He comes out and tries to kill little Billy Jernigan. And Billy Jernigan either, like, it's fight or flight immediately. He either tries to bust a move and get out of there, or he kind of cowers and takes one in the kidneys. Usually it's like one or the two. It's one or the other. Like, it's either half-hearted, like, oh, crap, I'm going to die.
Yep.
It's terrifying. And a lot of places stop doing it. For one, because this is one thing you would do. Not claiming I ever did anything like this. Maybe I encouraged other kids when I was like 11 years old. The really messed up thing you can do is when the coach calls out your number, you wait and watch. Because the kid's not looking at the numbers and he doesn't know who anybody's numbers are. You would wait until the kid turned his back and then you go off after him. It's really messed up. Hearing is actually probably the one of the few times in football where good hearing ability makes a big difference, because you hear the rustle of pads right before you take one in the vertebrae.
So, just to be clear, when it comes to the bull in the ring drill, it's whoever goes to the ground first who loses.
I guess so. You know, and I'm not even clear on my memory of exactly
of the rules.
I think the running back's trying to get to like the gap, you know, wherever the linebacker or the tackler came from, and it's hard open tackling. If you get if you're the runner and you see the guy coming, then you've got the advantage. If you don't see him coming, you're screwed. Like, you're turning just as you get hit. Now, the Oklahoma drill, anybody that played high school football probably remembers the Oklahoma drill. That's just where you line up, like an offensive and a defensive lineman will line up across from each other. There'll be a guy with a ball. Sometimes there's a linebacker behind the defensive lineman.
Yep.
And you have a one-on-one battle with a lineman, or sometimes the linebacker on a tight end, whatever it might be, and you try to tackle the running back. I'm not as down on the Oklahoma drill at all. Like, I always thought it was a good drill. I didn't think it was the best football drill because guys end up playing with really bad technique. So I think what the objection to the Oklahoma drill is, it almost encourages bad football.
Okay.
And a whole lot of, like, playing with your head down, more like charging out and spearing guys instead of actually playing good, solid technique football. So this is like the classic. It's a lot more helmet-to-helmet contact than is even realistic in a football game, so I think they wanted to minimize that.
Well, tell me this. What's the major difference between, let's say, the Oklahoma drill with the running back and the two guys who are squared up versus the individual one-on-one pass rush reps that the defensive linemen get against the O-line?
Like, one-on-one pass rush drills, there's actually, like, you could do those drills without a helmet.
Okay.
You know, it's you're upright, there's a little time before contact. If you're bull rushing, obviously, there's going to be some heavy contact, but it's a little bit more, it's actually a fair match. Now, offensive linemen will always contend that, like, no, this isn't a fair drill, because in a real game, you don't know what this, you know, you're not jumping the snap count and all this. Oh, stop it. All you have to do is line up five guys on the line of scrimmage, and you're going to get a bunch of one-on-one pass rush drills. But anyways, we'll talk to Chris Myers about that. He'll whine about that at 9 a.m. when he calls in.
I think a lot of this stuff makes sense. One of the most interesting things I read this week, and the NFL, if you're just joining us, banning the bull in the ring, the Oklahoma drill, and something else called the half line, which I've never actually heard of.
Yeah, oh, the half line drill. Yeah, see, yes. I liked half line drills.
So what was the half line?
The half line is just you're running drills, and sometimes it's a more efficient way to get things done, or if you're down in numbers, you just run like from the center, the right guard, the right tackle versus a defensive line on that half.
Okay.
And so you can get... You can be running two drills simultaneously so you can get twice as much work, or you can work with limited numbers. That's anytime that you limit the options for what plays might be called, you increase the violence of the drill. So With a half line drill, okay, these plays are only going to be called to this half of the field.
Okay.
So, yeah, guys are playing downhill really violently, especially if they know it's going to be a run. And I think that's where you kind of you want to reduce like the gauntlet element to the drills. And it makes sense. It's like their inner part of you says, like, oh, this is crap. It's making you wimpier. It's not real football when you do these drills. So I get it. And like there's look, the game has to make changes or it's going to die. There's just too much, you know, rightful concern about head injuries that you've got to adapt in this way.
One of the most interesting things, Seth, I've read this week is from Brandon Carr, the former Cowboys cornerback. I think he's now with Baltimore, and he told Peter King Monday, a couple days ago, that he genuinely feels that the NFL's changes with training camp practices, specifically not really allowing two-a-days in all, just in the spirit of it, he feels like that's actually extended his career.
Yeah.
That's how he feels. Now, the problem that we have is that there is that on the one hand, that I'm sure a number of guys, not just Brandon Carr, feel like the reduced practicing in the offseason has extended their careers and has lessened the wear and tear. But then you also have the younger players where you have basically the same amount of time with the younger guys as the veterans. And by all accounts, what these coaches think is that the younger players need more time.
Right.
They need more time. And can we find some sort of middle ground where maybe you have more time with the younger guys for the first couple of years?
I think they can do that. And that'll be one of the things that comes out in the next collective bargaining agreement. And it's I kind of cringe every time I hear NFL coaches complaining about that, because frankly, that's why I got so worked up yesterday when McClain said that Titus Howard probably didn't have good coaches in college.
Yes.
Because he went to a small school. Like, the biggest misconception out there is that NFL position coaches are good at their jobs. A lot of them really aren't. Like, a lot of them, there's guys in the NFL. Now, there's some that are awesome. Don't get me wrong. Like, some that are incredibly awesome. And that's why there's others that are just really good position coaches. But there are a lot of guys out there that aren't really good at teaching technique. They might be valued for their X's and O's and their strategy and their minds, like for all those other things, but they're not necessarily great at teaching technique. So if you have an offensive line coach who's really good at teaching technique, you have a huge advantage over other teams in the league, especially if those coaches are getting guys who aren't coached that well or haven't had enough time in college. So the excuse that you don't have enough time with them or there's not enough contact, it's just making excuses for yourself. And the other thing is, for a long time in the NFL, there have been a lot of teams, like way before they legislated having to practice with less pads, that did really well without practicing in pads. The San Francisco 49ers were one of the first to just take the pads off completely. Then the Denver Broncos, when Kubiak and Shanahan were there, rarely practiced in pads. So, but you go back to the days of the 49ers, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, in the 80s, where that was still old school football. Those guys did really, really well not practicing in pads because they actually taught technique. And then it's like with rugby. Like, oh, how do you teach tackling to rugby when they're not wearing pads? You teach incredible tackling because they're not wearing pads. So I just don't like those excuses out of coaches. Like, well, be a better football coach. There's guys out there doing it. Like, Dante Scarnecchia has got the same obstacles that everybody else does. He's the offensive line coach up in New England. He doesn't seem to have an issue with getting guys to play good technique.
I do sympathize, though, with the coaches. And obviously, there are some that are way better than others. But here's why. Isn't football right now the most different it's been at the college level and the NFL level? Like, before, think about this before. When you're talking about the football in the 70s, 80s, 90s, up until when I started watching football, up until probably the mid to late 2000s, you go to college football and it looked pretty similar to the NFL, and then it started to not look similar at all. So now when you watch college football, you can count on like two hands the number of offenses running like pure pro style. You think right. about like Michigan, Stanford, Notre Dame, some of these kind of places. But now it's so different that I do sympathize with these coaches that the games are so different at both levels that I can see why they feel like, hey, we need more time with these younger guys.
I sympathize with the college kids because you still have these pro coaching dinosaurs that are concerned with establishing the run. Like, establishing the run?
Gotta establish the run.
Yeah, you establish the run, you pass the ball well, then you can run all over them. Do that first. Pass the ball and then gash them with the run. I'm half joking there. But I agree with you, except that it used to be that the pro sport was a lot different than the college sport because passing was emphasized and was so much more precise. I mean, when you started getting the West Coast passing systems in the NFL, I think that pro football kind of took off and then college football cut up, and then now it's the opposite, where college is just so heavily passing. So it's I guess my question is just, but why? I don't understand what the big deal is. Like, college coaches shouldn't be in the business of preparing guys to play. Like,
I agree.
Preparing guys to play in the NFL isn't their prime business. Well, now, if you get guys that go off to the NFL, it helps for recruiting. But your prime business is winning college football games.
Well, that's on the NFL because they don't have a developmental league.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's no equivalent of the G League in the NBA or minor league baseball to where any of these pro sports teams can take whatever their system or their development and implant it in some other organization with younger guys.
Oh, but this is what I would say. Since I think what you're asking is, okay, doesn't eliminating some of these physical drills make it harder to coach these college kids that need indoctrination in the NFL? I would argue the exact opposite, which is that those drills, the bull in the ring, the Oklahoma drill, and the half line drill, those drills actually encourage bad habits. Like, they encourage not playing under control and balance. They encourage not really thinking. What they're good for, or they used to be good for at the lower levels, was just kind of like encouraging or diagnosing toughness. Like, okay, are these kids tough? Is this kid tough? Does this kid need to learn how to have a killer instinct? And I think there was value in it for them. The problem is that they're also just too dangerous. But I would say that the Oklahoma drill and I wouldn't say the bull in the ring made me tougher. Oklahoma drill made me tougher. Like, because it is.
But you had that when you were younger.
It's stressful because, yeah, and I didn't. No, we did that in the NFL. We were still doing that in the NFL. The thing about the Oklahoma drill is that it is you versus the offensive lineman and a running back, and everybody's watching. And a lot of times, like, the side that wins might get fewer wind sprints, and it's a very physical battle. That doesn't have anything to do with, like, real good football skills as much as it does, like, all right, you better get really mean and nasty really quick. And I think it did make me tougher. Like, it's a challenge you face where it's isolated that you're just not going to get on a normal football field. At the same time, though, I can see why, like, in today's game, you got to phase these drills out because there's too many people just pulling their kids out of football.
Yes, just to clarify, I have no issue with the NFL getting rid of Oklahoma drill, bull in the ring, half line, half squib, half whatever. I'm only saying that I can sympathize with NFL coaches when they say things like, hey, we need more time with these younger players. Yeah. These drills, I don't really care so much about. I think this is a good move by the NFL. So with that, we have headlines on the way. The NFL made two more moves that are going to affect you watching the game on television. We'll let you know what they are. Plus, why Seth Payne is actually feeling pretty good about the news that Jadeveon Clowney will probably not report until right before the season. That's next.